This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. In just a couple years, the historic Route 66, which is perhaps America's most famous highway, turns 100. And to celebrate that centennial, the State Historical Society of Missouri and partnering organizations have begun a collecting initiative to build up an exhibit that opens to the public in 2026. Here to talk with us about the items and anecdotes they've collected so far, why they hope to uplift the yet untold stories of women and immigrants along the route, and how Route 66 history shows up in St. Louis, Rolla, and beyond, we have two guests from the State Historical Society of Missouri. Katie Seal, coordinator at the Rolla and Springfield Research Centers. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And we also have Sean Ross, Assistant Director of Research. Welcome to you, and thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
So, Katie, I'd like to start with you. For those who may not be familiar with the history of Route 66, how would you explain the geographic significance of this highway?
Sure. So the story really kind of starts in the early 1920s as far as Route 66 itself. There was a real need in the U.S. for safe, reliable roads as
Rost.
The automobile starts taking off.
Don't worry about it. It happens
so
all the time.
In 1926 is when you officially get the establishment organization for Route 66, and it was such a major feat to connect kind of the West Coast with the Midwest here, Middle America. Route 66 covers 8 different states, and it was really a feat, an accomplishment for the nation, for the states that were involved in making this highway. Other interstate, you know, highway systems were going in as well, but this one really kind of stood the test of time where others did not.
Mm-hmm. And what about its cultural importance, Katie?
Yeah, there's some really great ways that Route 66 connected people. It wasn't just geographically. It was also, as you mentioned, culturally. People across different areas, rural and urban, were, you know, meeting and interacting. You had generations of people who lived and worked or traveled along Route 66, and it really just became this big icon. And I think a lot of that has to do with some of the early promoters of the road. You had some really strong figures here in Missouri and other places like Oklahoma who really saw this as an opportunity of not just connecting, you know, geographically, like we're going to build a road to make travel easier, safer, but they also saw this as a way to promote their towns, their communities, their states. So you start seeing, you know, the slogans of get your kicks on Route 66 and things like this really happened quite early. Mm-hmm. And it was a big connector for businesses, restaurants, some of these mom and pop shops that started popping up along the road. Everybody was able to connect with each other no matter where you were, you know, along the road, whether you're out in Arizona, if you're here in Missouri, you had that connection of Route 66. And so it became the tourist attraction. Mm-hmm. Was simply being on the road. And a lot of these communities and businesses were really able to key into that and kind of promote themselves using Route 66.
Mm-hmm. We want to invite you to this conversation. What are your memories of Route 66? And was there some part of that highway that has special meaning to you? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also email us at talk@stlpr.org. There is a lot of cultural lore that is associated with Route 66, and part of it came from marketing, as you've mentioned, Katie. We have a 1960s Chevrolet commercial to share that features messaging around Route 66.
Chevrolet, in behalf of your local authorized Chevrolet dealer, and his greatest show on worth, starring the 1961 Chevrolets and Corvairs, has brought you this portion of Route 66. Route Route 66 will continue after station identification.
So, Sean, let's get into that a little bit more, the role that pop culture and marketing played in making this route so iconic.
Sure. I think in a lot of ways, some of the conversations we've had with people who've lived on Route 66, grew up there, or even just traveled it, have really highlighted not only the commercial interests and businesses and things like that that existed there, but also, how it became a route that people could travel on, they could stay on and be familiar with a number of different ways across the entire duration of it, at least in Missouri, and of course across Illinois all the way out to California as well. So we've heard people talk about everything from the businesses that they owned or that their parents and family owned, all the way up to the places that they knew where to stop at and where they were comfortable at and where it was accessible for them to get to in a lot of ways. I think especially of Alberta's Hotel. We talked to some of the descendants of Alberta Ellis down in Springfield, and Alberta's Hotel was a Green Book site. It was primarily a space for African-American travelers on Route 66 and kind of hearing their stories of growing up in and around the hotel and what it meant for the community and the Black community, especially in a city like Springfield, as a community gathering point, a place that had beauty shops and hotel rooms and even entertainment locations like a Rumpus Room, really became a key element of the significance of Route 66 as a cultural travel hub.
Mm-hmm. And in that research that you've been doing about African Americans and their bits of history and their experiences along the route, you spoke with Elizabeth Logan Calvin about her grandmother, Alberta Ellis, who owned and operated that Alberta's Hotel in Springfield, Missouri, that you were just talking about. And again, that hotel was featured in the Green Book in 1954.
The Rumpus Room was a place where a lot of young people would come. Alberta was pretty strict, though. She tried to monitor the parking lot. Mm-hmm. She wanted to make sure nobody was in the cars, doing whatever. She monitored drinking. She had a card that you had to be a good citizen in order to get a card to be able to come easily into the Rumpus Room. She was just no nonsense. She didn't like for us to be, we were kind of nosy because, you got young people, you got the music, you got the jukebox going. And so sometimes we'd sneak around trying to, check out the scene. But if she saw us, it's like, get out of here, go to bed,
So, Sean, you mentioned a Rumpus Room. What is a Rumpus Room? And what is it that makes the presence of that in this hotel noteworthy?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, in talking with Liz Calvin and her brother Irv Logan, was that they had grown up in Alberta's Hotel. They had actually lived there for a period of time. And the story they kind of told was that Irv's room had been by where the Rumpus Room was at, but it became such a popular space, he kind of got moved out of there so that it could be kind of a gathering place. And it was kind of emphasized in the conversation with them that, with a segregated landscape in a city like Springfield there in the 1950s, it was one of the few places that African-American travelers and even residents of the city of Springfield could go to for various entertainment and performances and things like that. So it was highlighted that it was a place that not only local bands would play in and have dance parties and things like that, but even traveling musicians would come through Springfield and they would stay in Alberta's Hotel and they would play concerts in portions of Springfield and even play some concerts there in the Rumpus Room as well. So it really became a community gathering point along the route there, especially for the African-American community in and around Springfield.
Mm-hmm. Let's bring us a little bit closer to where the station is here in St. Louis. Sean, can you tell us maybe a little bit more about some of the popular tourist destinations that were here in St. Louis, those businesses and attractions that were built along or nearby Route 66?
Well, it's kind of interesting to think about for St. Louis is, crossing the river there on the northern side of the Mississippi River coming into St. Louis, and then the highway kind of weaving its way through the city of St. Louis. And it's not only we can think about, you know, major businesses that we think of today and different roadside taverns and attractions. I mean, everything that weaves its way eventually out where Interstate 44 exits kind of in the southwestern point of St. Louis. But, you know, these were neighborhoods. You know, we can think of the various neighborhoods that would have existed along there as well. And even schools. You know, I talked to a gentleman for a completely different set of interviews from our Route 66 one. But, you know, his high school was right on Route 66. So just the memories of that as well, of the businesses and the travel around there and the neighborhood that was in and around Route 66. I think that's important to remember, is that we can think of the kind of the landmarks that go along the way there from, you know, southwest Missouri and Joplin all the way up to St. Louis. But there were communities along there as well. And there was businesses and there was schools and various other things. So there's a number of landmarks in and around the St. Louis area that are neat and important to think of. And, you know, today we can think of some of the more prominent ones, like a Ted Drews that's been around for a number of years, kind of highlights its history there on Route 66 as well, and some of the other restaurants and attractions.
We're speaking today with Sean Rost, who's Assistant Director of Research with the State Historical Society of Missouri, as well as with Katie Seal, who is a coordinator at the Rolla and Springfield Research Centers for the State Historical Society of Missouri. Now, Katie, Rolla happens to be another area that we as a station serve, and that is also a place that is on the route where you're collecting stories. And you recently spoke with Tim Jones, the owner of the Totem Pole Trading Post, which is set to close, in fact, in the next month or so. What is it that you have learned about why there is so much pride in Route 66 culture?
So yeah, talking with Tim, his story is so fascinating, and it's one that's very familiar, but at the same time, it's one of those stories that are sadly kind of fading out. So his is a story of family-owned business. The Totem Pole opened further, actually down the road in Arlington in 1933 with different owners, and then his parents purchased it in the 50s. So this is a business that's been in the Jones family since the, you know, mid-1950s. And a lot of it with the pride is, especially here in Missouri, in some of these more rural communities, they literally built these businesses themselves. You know, they put together the cabins where people stayed. They built this service station. There's a really great tradition in Missouri, in particular towards the Ozarks region. And then here in Rolla, where, you know, you have the rock-constructed buildings, and you see a lot of those along the way. And just talking with Tim, you could see the pride and the memories of having built some of these different buildings and working alongside his father. And then later, the ability that he was able to have to work alongside his wife for decades. You know, the kids played in the back, and travelers would come from all over to visit, and, you know, years down the road, they might come back and visit and share memories and stories with them again. So a lot of it is that family and community connection that they're able to maintain. It's something, you know, they're able to build up themselves and kind of a legacy. So Tim's story, along with many others along Route 66, are just kind of special in that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, to take this theme of traveling, Illinois is also a place where Route 66 has threaded through. And this Route 66 actually begins in Chicago and passes through many Illinois towns. Katie, what commemorative efforts are planned in different parts of the state of Illinois?
Yeah, so there's a number of different organizations. I know the Illinois State Museum and then the Illinois Route 66 Association. They're working on their own endeavors to, you know, do some preservation work along the route for, you know, businesses that may still exist, but also planning on some celebrations. And there's big oral history collecting efforts through the State Museum. So they're collecting stories from people who traveled and worked along the route, similar to what we're doing here in Missouri. So a lot of that, trying to preserve some of those memories, some of those materials that still exist right now, and being able to showcase those to the public.
Mm-hmm. So materials would then include both items and anecdotes. What are the kinds of stories that are missing from our historical record presently that you are hoping to collect and to preserve? Sean?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, when we think about, you know, historical preservation and the historical record, we often think about, you know, documents. We think of, you know, paperwork. We think of these major things that you can kind of touch and hold and see. And we are certainly working on collecting those, you know, photographs, postcards, you know, business records, family papers. But we're also working on collecting oral histories, as Katie mentioned there, with what the state of Illinois is doing on their side of the river as well. But, you know, getting these firsthand perspectives of not only traveling the road and what people were seeing and experiencing and witnessing, but also those memories of living along the road and working along the road, too. I mean, it provides a lot of context of, you might see a newspaper advertisement that says, you know, this cafe in this town. But to get the story from the people who work there, or whose family owned it, or whoever, you know, stopped and had a meal there, you know, becomes very, very valuable, because it kind of fills in the historical gaps. You know, if we don't have photographs of that building or the inside of it, someone can describe it to us, or they can describe who owned it. They can provide a lot of important context that might be missing if the historical record is not complete. So a lot of our work is trying to, you know, provide a well-documented, well-rounded history of Route 66 through not only the documents and materials and photographs and postcards, but also the oral traditions and the oral history of that route as well.
Mm-hmm. And as far as that well-roundedness goes and those histories, Katie, women's stories and immigrant stories are also part of what you all are seeking, right?
Yeah, those are two of some of the, they can be slightly more difficult to track down and find a lot of information about those stories. But we know that there were women business owners. We know there were women who lived and traveled along Route 66, and getting their stories and perspective of what that was like, you know, over the course of Route 66 history, I think is just another little piece to the story. We have a number of immigrant groups, and, you know, in larger cities, you find them throughout St. Louis, but also there's kind of this smaller community in Rosati that's kind of right there on the county line of Phelps and Crawford, which this community started in the 1920s, so right at, you know, the start of Route 66. And Route 66 played a key role in the development of that community, in the wineries there, in their ability to sustain themselves even through the Great Depression. And, you know, so getting more of those stories of, you know, how they chose the location of where they ended up settling. Did Route 66 play a part of that because of the ease of access or for business purposes? Is really something we're looking to learn a little bit more about.
Mm-hmm. Now, Donna from Afton has called with her own bit of memory or a recollection that has to do with Route 66. Donna, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Hi, hello there. Yes, I'm glad I caught this show. It's actually a question about something I'm not sure what happened. I haven't looked it up, but I remember this. So I'm in my 60s now. And back when I was in my 20s and 30s, I would go down Watson Road, and there was this lovely set of old hotel, I guess you would call it, motels called the Pink or the Coral Courts. And they were pink in some places, I remember. But my recollection is really very slim now. And I'm wondering if anybody has looked into that and wondered where are they? They're gone. It looks like, because I've been by there now over the last few years, and they're not there anymore, like a lot of things. So I just wonder, because they were so unique, if there was something done with them, if they were moved, or what happened.
Mm-hmm. Donna, thank you. Katie or Sean, do you have any insight into that?
So I actually do know a little bit about this. Unfortunately, you are correct. The courts were razed, so they are no more. There was a big effort kind of throughout the 90s and 2000s to do some sort of preservation, you know, save one of the cabins or something. Unfortunately, not a lot of that was successful. There is actually remnants and like pieces from the Coral Court at the Missouri Transportation Museum up there in St. Louis. So they were able to actually salvage some building materials actually from the court and kind of reconstruct that inside of their museum space. But unfortunately, the structure themselves and where they originally stood was torn down.
Mm-hmm. And our research tells us that Coral Court was a motel that was demolished in 1995. And the motel site is now occupied by a 45-unit housing development called Oak Knoll Manor. As we wrap in this last minute or so, Sean, how is it that people can get involved in this collection or collecting process for the State Historical Society of Missouri?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, the Historical Society has 6 research centers around the state, so we have a kind of a very statewide focus in a lot of our activities and a lot of our projects. Katie is the coordinator for this Route 66 project, and people can reach out directly to Katie or to I via phone. They can also email us, or they can contact the State Historical Society of Missouri directly and be directed to us. And from there, we can kind of offer some best practices and some ideas for how to preserve those materials, how to donate those materials, and how to set up oral histories as well.
Mm-hmm. And Katie, anything quick to add to that?
No, if anybody's got any questions, even if you're wanting to do research, or like Donna had there with a Route 66 question and we can help, or you've got stories to share, please feel free to reach out. We'd love to talk to you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Sean Rost and Katie Seal with the State Historical Society of Missouri. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much. Get hip to that kindly tip.
Today's segment was produced by Aula Kuziz.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.